Cinema Oddities, late night movies with Robin Zapp. This is a podcast about cinematic oddities where we discuss any media that is too bizarre, abnormal, or off-kilter for contemporary audiences. Occasionally, these projects gel. Most times, they crash hard into the realm of obscurity. Join us as we delve into the cult classic swamp. I'm Zach.
And I'm Rob. And here on Cinema Oddities, we have a situation to talk about. And it is so specific. It's one where you have the opportunity to play a movie for somebody. Maybe you're being forced to do this. Maybe you're doing this voluntarily. But when you're in that situation, you got to ask yourself, well, what do I play? And now enter Rob and Zach. We are here to curate this list for you. We were curating this list at a rather brisk pace. That kind of exploded into three lists at one point. And so now we feel that we have to curate this list with a little more strictness. You think strictness is the correct word, Zach?
I'd say more along the lines of we're not going to, there's not an official canon, so to speak.
Yes, I think that's a good way to put it. When we discuss these things each episode, when we take in a new movie, visual album, TV show episode, whatever, we are really kind of discussing its status as a cinemodity. Now, we do these in terms of a series. You know, we like to follow a certain train of thought for some amount of time. And we have decided that we will talk about a late-night movie status for maybe one or two or some random smattering of what we actually talk about in that series. So, for example, Dean Norris series, which we are getting very close to the end of. Is this our last? No, we have one more after this. After what we talk about today. But when we do get the end of our Dean Norris series, we are going to have to sit down, Zach and I, and make the decision, well, what Dean Norris belongs on the late night movie list? Because Dean Norris, I think we can both agree, the one thing Zach and I can agree on, Dean Norris certainly deserves a spot on the late night movie list.
Absolutely.
Yes, yes. Big fans, Mr. Norris. Okay, Zach, would you like to introduce the movie we are talking about today? Dean Norris plays a major role. That's all I really want to say about it.
Yes, he plays the largest role of any film we've discussed of his canon so far. So you know what? Buckle in, folks.
It might be more screen time in this movie than in all of Breaking Bad.
I think so. I think that's a fair conclusion to draw, right?
Yes. We don't need to measure it because it's just so blatantly clear.
All right, the film we are discussing today is Gremlins 2, The New Batch.
What?
Exactly.
Dean Norris is in that?
I know. And the fun fact is that usually it's Rob doing the mental gymnastics, but he plays the same character in this as he does Terminator 2 Judgment Day.
Yes. And that character is none other than SWAT Team Leader. Is that really all it is? Does he ever get a last name or any other identifying?
No, it's just SWAT Team Leader.
SWAT Team Leader. I love it.
What happens, he was so traumatized by what happened in Gremlins, they transferred him over into California to be SWAT Team Leader in California. And then that's when he encountered Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Ah, and so after encountering Arnold Schwarzenegger, he felt he needed to step back and went to the DEA in New Mexico.
I was going to say he took a step back and ended up on Mars.
Oh, Zach, I asked you in a previous episode if you had any ideas, and you told me no. What is this? What is this coming at now? What?
I'm taking a lead after Rob, and I'm just making it up as I go along. So, to be fair, I can't say there's any sort of coherent plan involved.
What do you mean I make it up as I go along? You can see, can't you see in my video I have one of those cork boards with all the maps and the string everywhere? That is the Dean Norris universe.
He's even got the half-lit cigarette falling out of his mouth while he does all this.
Oh, 100% of the time. I like sleep with the half-lit cigarette in my mouth. But yes, right. Gremlins.
So how do we delve into this movie?
Okay, do we even need to discuss the concept of Gremlins? Is this something that people don't know about?
I think it could be summed up with this arrangement of musical notes.
I like dun, it. Dun, can dun, I whistle dun, it? Dun. Can I whistle it?
No.
Why
only
not?
I can crudely sing the Gremlins theme song.
Is that because you have Gremlins stuffed animals?
damn straight. Just so the audience knows at home, before Rob and I started, before we started recording, I showed off my two Gizmo stuffed animals. So Rob is very jelly right now.
I'm jelly. It's like Janie E, but jelly. That's me.
He's
right
jelly.
Now.
So, jelly. So
okay. Gremlins 2 is what we're discussing. Gremlins 1 is, I would say, almost a completely different style of movie from what I remember. I did not rewatch it before rewatching Gremlins 2 for, you know, this episode. But the first one is a lot darker than the second one, right?
Yeah, the first one is it's in that same kind of vein as a lot of 1980s kids movies, where I don't want to say it's a horror film, but it definitely is. It's dark. It's meant to put you on edge.
Yes. So the second one, the one we're going to discuss, is a romp. I would say it's a hoot. It's a rip roaring good time. Totally different from the first one. I don't remember for sure, but I believe I actually saw Gremlins 2 first. I didn't see the first one first. And when I saw the first one, I was kind of blown away by how different it was in tone.
Oh, it's so great. I love this movie so. Okay, first, I want to say for the record, I absolutely love this movie. This is one of those few movies that I've told Rob this story. Is that I, as a child, and I think Rob can relate to this for the most part. I was a huge movie aficionado as a child. I tried to watch as many things as I possibly could. But as you get older, you go back and rewatch some of the things you cherished as a child and realize, oh, wait, this was actually garbage. You're a bad kid for liking this. Except, like, my favorite example of that, when I was younger, I loved Pierce Brosnan's Die Another Day. I absolutely loved that film. I watched that a couple of years ago, and I said, dear Lord, what is wrong with me?
That's a rough one to admit as an example.
that is a rough film. I remember Skyfall, everyone's like, oh, man, Pierce Brosnan almost destroyed the Bond franchise. I'm like, no, Die Another Day is great. And I watched it, and I'm like, this is horrible. I still like that Madonna music. I like the Madonna Bond song, though. I do like that.
Not the music video, but I like the intro.
The intro is cool. But I remember Gremlins. I remember seeing Gremlins back during 2002 or 2000, like early 2003, late 2002. And I remember watching. I thought it was cool. I didn't think that much of it. Then I remember this was back like in the dark ages. Like if you wanted to like get a movie, like if you were a kid, if Blockbuster didn't have it, you were like royally screwed because there was no thing called it rhymes with Schmorrent. There was nothing you could type into a computer to download movies on a whim then.
You mean Netflix?
Of course, wink, wink, but so I remember at the time being absolutely. It was like I remember I wanted to see Gremlins 2, and obviously it did not air on TV. Like it was one of those things that like never aired on TV, and so I really wanted a copy of it. And I remember at the only place to get like really relatively weird movies that weren't like major blockbuster releases was Sam Goody. Do you remember Sam Goody, Rob?
I do not remember Sam Goody. The name sounds vaguely familiar, but know it.
It's like an FYE.
Okay, I remember FYE. I don't remember Sam Goody.
Oh, I'm trying to get another example of Sam Goody that would be. They went by many names over the years, different types of like entertainment retail stores. They had like T-shirts, CDs, those things now we use as coasters. But back in the day, we actually play music.
Oh yeah, there's big stores in New York City, like in
like
Manhattan.
Virgin Megastore.
Megastore. Yeah, I'm thinking of what it's called J&R Music Store or something, like the J&R Department Store or something like that.
They were very regional. Different regions of the country had them.
Okay, sure.
FYE is the one probably most people just know because it's one of the few that's still around to this day.
Oh, wow.
But I remember I found a copy on VHS there, and I still have it to this day. Nice. And it's the only version I've ever watched. I have to ask you, in the version that you watched, Rob, the version that you bought off your legally obtained copy that you went and purchased at the store or the electronics store.
I have the receipt.
He has the receipt. Clearly not forged. And not on the back of a cocktail napkin. Did you have Hulk Hogan in your version of the movie?
Yes, Hulk Hogan is the one who gets the Gremlins out of the film booth when they break the film reel.
My version
of the movie. Yes.
Okay, because I want to get everyone again peek behind the curtain. When Rob and I were preparing for this episode, Rob sent me a Key and Peele clip of one of their skits, and there's a point in the skit where someone says, "We should have the Hulk." And Jordan Peele's character is like, oh, now you're really going off the rails. I love it. And I'm thinking about it, and I said, wait, I don't remember that scene. And my version does not have the Hulk Hogan scene, and I've never seen that to this day.
I read about this when I was doing my research into Gremlins 2 after rewatching it and making my notes. And when I read that there's one different version of this movie that exists only on VHS, I was like, holy shit, Zach told me he has it on VHS.
Yep.
I might be taking a trip to go see Zach so I can see this version of the goddamn movie, because if you hadn't guessed, I love this movie too, even with Hulk Hogan in it. Who do you get? What isn't it John Wayne or something?
Yes. What happens is that, and actually it works perfectly, because I'm watching a videotape. It's grainy. The videotape has, I've had it for over 15 years now, so it's got to be at least 20 years old since it probably was produced. And what happens is that you're in the middle of the movie, and the movie has like a VHS, like it like starts to deteriorate, and you're like, yes. Like it starts to freeze. And it's like the only way like a VHS tape would. And then like all of a sudden, because actually as I was eating something while I was watching it, and as it's happening, I'm like, oh no, don't tell me the tape broke. And I actually fell for the ploy. And I'm like, no. And then like you see the grainy silhouette of like two gremlins as they do shadow puppets. Like one does a bird, one does like a rabbit. And he's like, oh, yep. Little bunny.
That's in my version as well.
Oh, okay, you get that too. Yep. And then the next thing that happens is John Wayne shows up.
Rustlers, hold it.
No.
Get the hell off my spread. Now. Go on back to your own movie. Well, I warned them. I don't need varmints on my ranch, and you folks don't need them in your TV sets. Let's start that movie up again.
It's three gremlins dressed as like bandits, like cowboy bandits, and it goes right back to the movie. It's like maybe a 30-second sequence, and that's it.
Wow. Okay, I, since you said you never saw it, can I explain what happens in my version of the movie?
Please do.
Okay, so the first question I want to ask you is, do you remember what part of the movie does the VHS freeze up and it starts to do the, you know, it breaks, like the gremlins break the fourth wall, whole type of thing? What scene? Do you remember what was going on?
Is it when
Billy's talking to Christopher Lee with Robert Picardo as well? They're like in the hallway or something. Everybody's freaking out.
Yeah, I think so. I think that. I don't know if it's right. It might be right. I know he's talking to Robert Picardo. I know that.
Okay.
But I don't remember exactly when. Like obviously, all hell's breaking loose with the gremlins. I feel like it might be a little bit earlier, but I doubt it. Considering the fact that it just changed the scenes out, I'm probably wrong on that.
Okay, so that's where mine starts, and what happens in my version of the movie is, you know, they're all talking, and like Christopher Lee gets his voice starts to get distorted, and like the screen does a jump, and then you see like the film reel burn through and break away. So it doesn't freeze like a VHS would. It's actually like the gremlins broke the film reel, and that's what we get to see. And then there's the silhouette of the gremlins, and we see the silhouette of the gremlins do hand puppets, shadow puppets. And then the gremlins put on, like, a video of women playing volleyball. Like, there's, like, a five-second clip of women playing volleyball. And then what we get is...
Sir! Mom! I can't believe this. I mean, Mom! This is worse than the first one.
We just show these movies, madam. We don't make them.
Mom! I quit. Call the union. Call the National Guard. Those things have taken over the projector. They refuse to show the rest of the film. All they want to see is Snow White, the Seven Dwarfs.
Enough! I'll take care of this.
We have gremlins in the projection booth. Could you help us?
Gremlins? In this theater? Now? Okay, you guys, listen up.
People pay good money to see this movie. When they go out to a theater, they want cold sodas, hot popcorn, and no monsters in the projection booth. Do I have to come up there myself? Do you think the Grimsters can stand up to the Hulkster? Well, if I were you, I'd run the rest of Gremlins 2 right now.
Sorry, folks. It won't happen again.
Hulk Hogan gets up and probably for 20 seconds goes on a huge rant about how, like, you think the Gremsters can beat the Hulksters? And he does the whole shirt rip-off thing. And that, like, makes the Gremlins afraid and they put the movie back on. That's what I get.
I did not get that. You're right. What happens?
How crazy is that, Zach? That's insane.
I know. This movie is fabulous. This movie, like, this is, like I said, going back to my original point before we got off on a tangent, was that this movie is so, like, I don't think as a child I could appreciate the insanity that this movie is. Like, this is another example along the lines of Men, Women, and Children and the Book of Henry, where you're like, how on earth did this get made? How did people sign off on this and nobody say no?
See, this is a different level. I think this is, you have the right idea, but it's attained a different level. Because I agree with you on this. Because
it works. We're like, okay. Yes. I make the joke about, like, in Men, Women, and Children. It's like nobody said no, and it turned out horribly. This is an example of nobody said no, and it works. Like, there's some instances watching this where it's like, okay, you don't need. So I know at one point toward the very end of the film where it's like, okay, they're getting everything set up in the lobby of the Clamp building, and it's like, okay, we cut back to the Gremlins in the lab. The lab, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the genetics lab. And it's like, okay, do we really need another sequence of them just doing stuff? And it's like, of course, it's a Gremlins movie where everything, it's all hell breaking loose. I'm like, why on earth will I want less of this? I want more nonsense.
Oh my God. So yes, before we get into how much we love this movie, because there's so much to talk about in this movie as well, I just want to say that I think Zach and I can both agree, the physical VHS tape that you have, do you have the box for it as well?
Yes.
That and the box, that is probably the first thing I think we have that is a physical cinemodity, that you have a different version of the movie than I think I can possibly get. That's crazy. That's a cinemodity, as far as I'm concerned.
All right. Cue the music.
Physical cinemodity. Look at that. We didn't even know we were coming up with those.
Oh, dear.
Okay, yeah,
I don't even know where to begin with this movie.
Do you know what? I really don't know either, because if you have not seen this movie,
you are missing out.
You are missing out, and really, I think Zach and I both perceive this movie as start to finish. You're either laughing or going, what? Something along those lines. Or a combination of the two, where you really can't breathe for a little bit because, you know, your body is so confused about what you're seeing and hearing and feeling and things like that. That's this movie.
There's so many layers of parody in this that I don't even think most people are cognizant of. Like, I think it isn't, like, we'll get into this later on, though, but, like, I think you have to watch the first Gremlins to really appreciate this. Because if you watch this solely by itself, without knowing what goes on in the first Gremlins, it just comes across as, like, a B, like, creature feature. Like, does it have very high production value? Yes. It comes across as a very well-made B-creature feature, which it's trying to be, but you don't appreciate the context or how far off the reservation it is compared to what it could have been.
Definitely.
Going through, like, the reviews at the time, like, this did not get great reviews. Like, it got very middle-of-the-road reviews. And, like, obviously, going back to the most important film critic of that time, with Roger Ebert, he made some comment along the lines of, like, oh, you know, he appreciated how different it was. He felt it was a little too conventional. This movie could not be less conventional than a sequel. Like, yes, do you have Gremlins having hell break all loose? Yes. But it pushes that to such an extreme premise. I think we mentioned it. Oh, okay, I don't think we mentioned it. But, like, in the first Gremlins, the only scene in the first Gremlins that resembles anything that goes on in this is the scene when they're in the movie. All the Gremlins are in the movie theater and they're watching Snow White and they're singing along to "Hi Ho, Hi Ho, It's Off to Work We Go."
Oh,
Yeah, that's the most comical it ever gets.
Yeah, or the most farcical, where, like, what's his name? Zach Gaffigan? I'm trying to think of his name. Zach Galligan? Whatever. Zach Galligan. He, like, turns around to Phoebe Cates, and it's like, they're watching Snow White. It's like, they're all in the theater just watching Snow White. It's like, why wouldn't Gremlins find that funny? Or find that music? It's just a subtle moment, which, again, it's just so weird. So it's like, okay, you don't think much of it, though. But it's, like I said, the first Gremlins is, like, if you don't know what you're getting into, you see Gizmo, and Gizmo's cute, then he bursts all these horrible little creatures.
Oh, yeah.
Or, like, all these mean creatures. It's amazing how in every single of these two movies, all the other Mogwais or Gremlins, as soon as Gizmo bursts them, their first thing is to try to destroy him.
My commentary for this movie is full of me like why are they bullying Gizmo? Like, why are they bullying the nice, quiet kid, you know? Like, that's so fucked up.
And the fun thing about this movie is that even when all the other Mogwais are birthed in Gremlins 2, he immediately, like, hides under the desk.
Yeah!
Gizmo read the script to this before he even got there. He knew. He hid under the desk. I feel like it's going to be you and I reminiscing about certain points of this movie.
Okay,
so what was your first point?
I looked at my notes, and I actually do have somewhere I want to start, Zach. So one of the first shots of this movie, after the Looney Tunes stuff at the beginning, did your version of the movie have that?
Yes, with Daffy and Bugs.
Yeah. I thought they missed an opportunity there. I thought they should have had, like, a Gremlin break through the Warner Brothers logo or something.
Well,
I thought that
would
have been better.
Now that you remind me, in my version, remember how I said between the two parts of John Wayne, there's a scene where something happens?
Hey, I bet that was... Say, do you think that... Hey, could that have been a Gremlin?
That is what happens in the my version of the movie.
Okay, wow. Yeah, I don't get that at all, that scene. Well, I only have Looney Tunes at the beginning and the end, and they don't really do anything. They just kind of, like, Daffy wants to say the title and he doesn't do it right.
You got them at the end?
Yeah, at the end of the credits. There's another scene with Daffy Duck and Looney Tune. It's a post-credits scene, like legitimately a post-credits scene in the version I have.
Okay, now I'm
intrigued.
Now I'm intrigued. I'm curious if I have that, because I don't think I have that. But I might.
You didn't watch all the credits? Daffy Duck, like, comments on how long the credits are throughout the credits too in my version.
Long, isn't it?
Oh, okay. I gotta go back to that then.
Okay, cool. So look at that. So that is, you know, that's the first thing we get in this whole movie almost is, or the very first thing, is Looney Tunes. But once we get into the movie, one of the first shots we see is, like, the zoom-in on New York, you know, like the aerial view of all of Manhattan, and they're going in on it. I have to say, I'd be remiss if I did not bring it up. Is this the first time that we have pre-9/11 imagery on Cinemodities? Because we've had 9/11 imagery, now we have pre
9/11 imagery.
Is it? Yeah. Is it the first? Did we get any in total? So.
No, there's no that doesn't take place in New York.
Ah, yes. Okay. So yeah, we get to see the Twin Towers at the very beginning of this movie. We get some pre 9/11 imagery. That sets the tone for the whole thing, right?
Yes.
Especially now that we know that 9/11 happened, they were ahead of their time. Who directed this? What's his name?
Joe Dante.
Yes. Speaking of Looney Tunes, he did Back in Action, right?
Yes, which will probably be a cinemati at one point.
Oh, yeah.
If you get on far enough.
Oh, yes. Okay, so I guess I would say I have a few aspects of this movie that I absolutely adore, and I think those are the things I want to bring up and talk about so we can get some good clips in here. That's what I'm thinking about with this movie. What do you have, Zach? Anything like that?
I have a soft spot for Gizmo, and that's one complaint I have about this movie is there's not enough Gizmo. Like, he has a great moment toward the end where he kills what's that gremlin's name? Is it Mohawk? Mohawk's the bad gremlin. I know Stripe is the bad one in the first Gremlins.
So he kills the spider gremlin near the end.
But that's Mohawk, though, isn't it? The bad one? Like, the main bad one?
I don't know. I guess I've never really kept track of.
You don't know your specific Gremlins?
I don't. I'm not up on the. I care more about the characters. I care more about John Glover and Haviland Morris.
And Dick Miller.
Yeah. Basically everybody but the two main characters.
I'm gonna go out on a limb here and say that any movie that Dick Miller is in, it's an automatic cinemati. Dick Miller, the entire filmography of Dick Miller, which is like 80 movies. I think that man did not say no to anything for a while. Literally every movie he is a Cinemati. I'm saying it now.
I'm gonna push back on that.
Dick Miller is a treasure.
Okay, so
anyway, though, continue.
For the audience, that is Zach proposing an idea, and we're gonna talk about it, and we'll get back
and
to you.
It's set in stone.
It's in the movie. Okay, so I think the first thing I want to bring out about this movie is something that I think if you just show this to someone, or someone who maybe saw it when they were younger, they might have caught on at one point or another, but not realized how prevalent it is throughout the whole movie. And the point I'm bringing up are the building voiceovers. So you know how the building, like, says stuff to everybody in the building when things are going on? Do you realize how funny all of those are? Like, that is one of the funniest parts of this movie. Those, like, little messages in the background I find so incredibly comical. So one of them, near the beginning of the movie, is the voiceover says, you know, the car parked in parking garage, whatever, with license plate, blah, blah, blah. Can you please remove your vehicle? It is old and dirty. Like, that's the announcement that they have to tell this giant building full of people. Like, one car is old and dirty.
Will the owner of the car with license number 1EG401 please remove it from the Clamp parking garage? Your car is old and dirty.
When the gremlins are, like, first starting to take over and the lights start to flicker, the building says, "We are experiencing technical difficulties. Please try not to notice."
The Clamp Circle is experiencing some temporary
technical difficulties with our
illumination. Please try not to notice.
That is the best possible thing to say in the face of technical difficulties. I think the only way that line would be funnier if it was like on an airplane, like if you heard a pilot say that. Like, "We are experiencing technical difficulties. Please try not to notice." Stuff like that. I think that, you know, this thing that I'm pointing out right now, it really kind of extends to this whole movie. It has that every little bit, every scene has tons of stuff sprinkled into it. You know, it's like that's not just the one joke in the movie. It's so dense with this stuff. And that's what I love about it.
That is where this movie has the majority of its laughs. You have so many of these small moments that are just not noticeable. But So I'm trying to think. Like, I really don't have a favorite moment. The only moment in this movie that I genuinely love, above all others, is I love the scene where the twin scientists play the music for Gizmo and he just starts dancing. And Christopher Lee, I just like the idea of how they were able to make. I know it's obviously a very crude composite shot, but the idea of just Gizmo dancing and it's Christopher Lee. Like, at the time, people have to realize this. Christopher Lee. I don't want to say that, like, he was a B actor. Like, it's like everyone looks back at Christopher Lee now. It's like, oh my God, it's Christopher Lee. Like, nobody took Christopher Lee seriously. Like during the early, like, late, not like 80s, early 90s, he was a has been.
Yeah, didn't he do some really bad sequels to stuff? Like, he was in really schlocky sequels and things like that?
He was the heir to Dracula after Bela Lugosi, because he was in the Hammer horror films. He was their Dracula.
Okay.
And that's what he was known for, which was considered schlock. That was all. The Hammer horror films were more or less schlock. Mm-hmm. They were very well-made schlock, but they weren't high art. And it wasn't until the last 20 years that Christopher Lee kind of had this reputation of, oh man, it's Christopher Lee. And so the time, like it's like, oh, Christopher Lee's in this. But that really wasn't a huge get at the time. Okay. He probably needed work, and Joe Dante was like, "Hey, would you mind doing this?" And again, he's Christopher Lee. He adds gravitas just by being there. And then there's one other thing that I think people don't realize. I remember I heard this a couple. This was big during the obviously the election, presidential election, with Clamp. What's his name? Daniel Clamp.
I believe so. Yeah, Daniel.
Daniel Clamp. Is that everyone was like, "Oh, he's a parody of Donald Trump," and yes, mm-hmm. he's a parody of 90s Trump. But at the same time, though, he's also a parody of Ted Turner. Like, that's the whole thing. And everyone forgets Ted Turner was, like, insane, too. Like, everyone forgets, early 90s, like, billionaires were, like great. Like, Ted Turner, like my favorite thing about, there's a Family Guy joke, and we have to insert it here, where it's Ted Turner, and he's like, "I'm going to colorize the moon."
And that's,
I'd like to announce I'm giving a gift the whole world can appreciate. I've colorized the moon.
And that's hysterical because Ted Turner, like, actually at one point in his life was buying black and white movies to color them. Like, that was, like, an actual project he was doing.
Ah, damn.
And it's like, and Ted Turner was insane. Like, people out there, like, he's gone away now. Like, it's funny, a couple, like, months ago, I'm like, what happened to Ted Turner? And I look up, there's, like, no new information. No, he's still alive, but you don't hear anything about him anymore. So I'm guessing he has nothing. But no, but, like, and that's what Clamp is. Clamp is a mix between Trump and Ted Turner. And that's where the video at the end, where, like, he thinks everything's, like everything's falling apart, and he plays the video that's, like, the end of times. And that's a real thing, because, like, Ted Turner actually had, like a 60-second video produced in case there was a nuclear Armageddon, and he wanted a proper sign-off for CNN. That's a real thing that they're parroting.
Oh, like, hot damn.
Because of the end of civilization, the Clamp Cable Network now leaves the air. We hope you have enjoyed our programming. But more importantly, we hope you have enjoyed life.
It's beautiful, isn't it?
And 99% of people don't know that.
Like, I didn't know that, but it kind of makes sense. Like, I believe it, that a TV station or TV network would have such a plan in place, you know?
Just in case there was complete Armageddon, they wanted a proper sign-off.
I think that I'm as crazy as Daniel Clamp and Ted Turner, because I would do that for sure.
You would do that, but like
I'd have two different videos for like different world ending events.
Oh, okay, you have more than one videotape lying around.
Yes.
But like, didn't even have the stuff like he's going around saying, "You called city developer save city." I like the sound of that. That's clearly a Trump. That is a through and through Donald Trump thing he would say. There's stories about how the fact that Daniel Clamp was originally intended to be a mean character, and I guess the portrayal by the actor kind of was more lighthearted, so they tweaked the story appropriately.
Oh, okay.
That's a story I've read over the years. Like, that, again, this all came out back during the presidential election. We were doing everything in our power to tie everything to Trump more so than we do now.
Of course, yes.
But going back to the movie itself, but no, I guess Daniel Clamp is a fun, like, usually, like, again, you'd have that character, and the CEO would be the guy who's only concerned about profits. I only care about profits. Why are they destroying my building? And he's in the moment Billy shows up and starts explaining to him what these things are, he is 100% on board. He's like,
oh, yeah.
Oh, okay, they're gremlins. I'm going to stop the gremlins. And his little, like, evacuation tube that has him go underneath a plant in the middle of Midtown.
Yeah.
That scene in and of itself is hysterical. He has his little escape pod that delivers him underneath a plant.
And he has the same, like, stoic stance and facial expression the entire time it's coming up out of the ground. And we get to see it coming out of the ground the whole way. Oh. It's not quick, either. Like, the camera has to focus on it. And it does, like, you know, a good, like, a revolving shot to get around it to see him. But it's hilarious, this whole movie.
It's very slow and deliberate, which I think explains the movie as a whole. It's a movie, everything the movie does, again, going back to Men, Women, and Children, Book of Henry, Jason Reitman and Colin Trevorrow, respectively, had no intentions on making the dumpster fires that they made. Joe Dante put everything he wanted to in this movie. Like, there's nothing in this movie that is by accident. I think it's worth noting, too, even like we take, like, I know that's it's a cliche now, too, to say, or it's archaic, say, oh, CGI effects are horrible, practical effects are better. But, like, you know how much work goes into having, like, 15 gremlins in one scene?
Oh, my God, yeah. That's the art direction in this movie is so, the attention to detail in the art direction in this is so wildly fantastic that I can't imagine how much effort they put into some of this stuff.
It really is. Like, and that's, I think that's why, you know, yes, there is a cult following for this movie now. It might be even a little bit above that. The fact that people are not just like going gonzo at, like, about this film, it has to be one of two things, in my opinion. One, people still, this thing still hasn't hit critical mass in the cult classics department. It has not reached the Room level. I guess there is that branding of it where it's like, oh, it was. Think about it. This thing was produced by Steven Spielberg. Needs no introduction. Kathleen Kennedy, who's now the head of Lucasfilm.
I saw that when I watched the credits. I saw Kathleen Kennedy, or even in the intro credits, I think.
Yeah, she's
and
in
I
the
was
intro
like,
credits.
I was like, oh wow, Kathleen Kennedy was involved with this.
And yeah, and Frank Marshall, who's her husband, who has worked on like every single movie in Hollywood, and he's his current thing now is Jurassic World. That's his main thing. He's working on like 24/7. So like, you have this movie that had like some of the biggest people in Hollywood involved on it. You had Rick Baker, who's one of the legendary special effects makeup artists. So I guess in a way it's hard to like appreciate this as a cult classic, mm-hmm. just because it is it has so much money behind it and so much proper talent.
No aspect of this movie is really lacking, you know?
No.
I don't think that anything is weak in any respect.
And I think that's what ultimately is this film's biggest detriment, is that people can't appreciate it for the nutso-whack-job film that it is. Like, there is, like, again, going back to the Key and Peele sketch, it's I remember I saw that sketch before Rob shared it with me.
Oh, okay.
Because that was a big thing on Twitter, like, whenever that premiered, like, everyone was sharing that for, like, a day or two. I remember watching it, and, like, when you break the movie down to those terms, it makes you wonder, wow, how on earth did this get made? Because at the very end of that sketch, Keegan-Michael Key turns around and says, well, none of those are in the movie, and obviously a subtitle appears, all those ideas were in the final film.
Yep.
and that's what it is, though, because, if I could sit down and rewatch this again, it would be hysterical to keep a list of just all the things that are just gonzo in this film. And I think you'd be, what, into 300 or 400 bullet points before you were done?
You'd have to watch it multiple times. You could not. I would say it is impossible to do in one viewing.
All the gonzo things that go on during this movie.
Yeah, because I think, you know, we mentioned it before. We said we have all these little things, and I actually said it to Zach before we started recording that, you know, our trait that I really like in media, TV shows and movies, is when the little bits are really funny and interesting. Like, yes, the whole story should be intriguing to some extent, but I want to be able to, like, laugh at a joke and miss three jokes because I'm laughing. So when I rewatch it, I catch even more. And that's how I think of Gremlins and how dense it is. Gremlins 2.
Oh, yeah, because there are these small things. Even I kind of sat there I haven't watched this, I think, in about 4 years, because as I always like to tell people, I was the only person that brought a VCR to college.
Mm-hmm.
And never mind, I brought two tapes with me. I brought blank tape to record things when I wasn't in my room, and I brought my copy of Gremlins 2.
Nice.
And so at one point, I watched this. It had to be at least 4 years ago. And, like, I remember a lot of the major things. Like, again, like I said, the thing I really picked, there's two things I picked up on this time, was A, the Ted Turner clamp thing. I hadn't really picked up on that until now. And the second thing was, there's a scene in the movie, this is toward the end, this is right after Gizmo kills the spider gremlin.
Okay.
Where Dick Miller and Marla and them are all together, and she's like, oh, don't bring up Abraham Lincoln.
Washington didn't give up. Lincoln didn't give
Please.
Up.
Please.
What's wrong?
Oh, don't mention Lincoln. Something terrible happened to me when you were on Lincoln's birthday. I was 6 or 7, and I remember I had the day off from school, and Mom had let me go to the park. She made me a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. I was going through that peanut butter and jelly sandwich phase. And this man with this beard and a hat looked just like Abe Lincoln.
Honey, I really don't think we've got time for this now, you know?
I remember, he said, hello, little girl.
Honey, come on.
It's like, it was President's Day weekend. My mother packed me a peanut butter and jelly sandwich because at the time, I was going through a phase with that. And, like, and you see Zach Galligan in the background. That's the thing about this movie. Every character, every actor in this movie is aware of the movie they're in. Nobody is, like, trying to act above it, or no one's trying to deliberately ham it up. Everybody knows the movie that they're in, which, again, to communicate that to your actors, again, it's a credit to everybody involved. And then, like, Zach Galligan's like, honey, this is the time or place for this. Because I'm not sure if you remember this from the first Gremlins, Rob.
Oh, but it's the Christmas one, right? With her dad as Santa Claus.
Yeah, he falls down the chimney and breaks his neck.
Yeah.
The fact that the movie openly is mocking not just that scene in the previous movie about her father dying, but how the fact that in any one of these kids' movies, there's always that element where, like, something really morbid happens that, like, adds a little bit more stakes to what's going on currently. Yeah. And the movie just deliberately says, nope, we're not going to indulge in that. Moving on.
And so I think that, you know, the first one in the first movie, which doesn't get shut down, it's her dad dying on Christmas. The second one, her story does get cut off, but I feel that they strongly insinuate, maybe this is different in the VHS movie, let's find out. They strongly insinuate that she gets, like, molested by a guy dressed as Abraham Lincoln.
Is that I was wondering about that. Because obviously, once the scene started, and you see Zach Galligan's face, you know where, I'm like, oh, okay, he's going to sweep this under the rug, and I laughed. But I'm trying to follow the context of the story, because obviously it's not meant to be taken seriously. So I'm trying to figure out where it is, and I'm sorry. I don't know if she was molested anyway. I don't think you can infer that. There's not enough there. I don't think it's meant for you to infer, because it's not meant to be taken seriously.
We might have to go back and listen to this part of the movie and do some detailed analysis.
I think it's the whole idea of the fact, like, in the first movie, her father slips and snaps his neck, and then she's disturbed by a man in an Abraham Lincoln costume, which I think is the exact polar opposite of emotions from your audience.
Yes, it is very different. So I'm glad you brought up that point, because that is something that we should absolutely say. Once again, if you've never seen Gremlins 2, you're missing out, but it is hilarious, but it is self-aware. This movie is incredibly self-aware. And we get one of my favorite scenes in the movie, which I had, like, totally forgotten about before I rewatched it for this episode. So I'm sitting here, and I'm recording my commentary, and of course, as I'm, you know, just thinking about the gremlins and I know all their rules, I'm being the one who's like, well, you know, what's the cutoff for after midnight? It's always after midnight. Like, is 7:59 a.m. no good, but 8 a.m. is good? Like, do they have to go to sleep? And I'm like, what if you put them on a plane and they go through different time zones? When is it midnight? And I'm actually saying these things in my commentary. And then we get a scene in the movie where they're asking the main character about the rules.
Okay, wait. What if one of them eats something at 11 o'clock, but then he gets something stuck in his teeth?
Yeah, like a caraway seed or a sesame seed.
Whatever, right.
And then after 12 o'clock, it comes out. Now, he didn't eat that after midnight.
Yeah, that's right.
I didn't make the rules, okay?
Rules? I don't believe this.
Oh, wait a minute. What about this? What if they're eating in an airplane and they cross a time zone? I mean, it's always midnight somewhere.
I fell in love with this movie again in that moment, Zach.
Well, that's the brilliance of this movie. This is a movie that, again, the story behind this was the first movie came out in 1984. Huge success. Part of that legendary summer of 1984, where you had Ghostbusters, you had this. But you had all these things, and obviously the movie made a ton of money. They sold a ton of merchandise off of it. And because it was produced by Amblin, Spielberg's production company, Spielberg was like telling Joe Dante, we need to make a sequel. And Joe Dante, I think, always just pushed, the story was that he pushed back on his other things he wanted to do. And he didn't think really there was any other story. It's like, how do you make a sequel to a bunch of little gremlins running around terrorizing a small town? How do you improve upon that? How do you do it? And the story was that they said, like, they kept begging him for it until eventually he kind of just relented and said, let me do whatever I want and I'll do it. And they said, okay. And they basically gave him a blank check. It was like, do whatever you want. There's no way this can fail.
Okay.
And nobody looked over his shoulder. I guess they trusted him enough. And you did have all these popular. I think it's also a movie that is very, even though now it's very dated. Like, it looked not for special effects, just because of the context of how the movie takes place. Like Rob was saying, this is a pre-9/11 movie. That wasn't the most jarring scenery thing for me. The thing that was the most jarring scenery was that you look outside the building. Again, I don't know my New York City streets, though. But what's now the MetLife building is then the Pan Am building.
Yes, the Pan Am building.
Pan Am. And I think it lasted, what, maybe five to ten years, and that was gone? Like that. I think they dissolved in the 90s. To me, that's the most jarring part.
not the flying gargoyle gremlin. The Pan Am building.
Pan Am building. But no. So, like, going back to that. So, Joe Dante does all this. In the movie, it's like, I don't want to say it's a flop, but like, it did not make back its budget, like, from theatrical receipts, which is like, considering how much money the first movie made, was like horrible. And like, they've always blamed it on the whole idea of like, oh, it was too late. Like, it came 7 years after the original. Like, kids had, I think about, if you were 7 years old when the first Gremlins came out, you're a teenager now. It's like, I don't want to see a kids movie. And I don't think that's the reason why this movie didn't appeal to people. I think this movie was trying so hard to lean into the criticisms of the first movie. Like Rob pointed out, the fact there's a scene in the movie where characters openly dissect the rules of this film and the prior film and openly mock them. And they only stop until a gremlin literally jumps out of a computer console and starts biting them.
Yeah. It's fantastic.
Exactly. The movie literally shuts itself up. And I think that's the reason why this movie never clicked with general audiences. Like Rob said, it's extremely meta. Mm-hmm. I don't think that was even that was barely a concept 10 years ago to have something so self-referential. Okay. I think doing that in the early 90s or even when this was made back in the late 80s, I think in a weird way it was a movie – again, Joe Dante made the movie he wanted to. It shows. And I think at the same time, he alienated his entire audience, except for a few people who could appreciate it at the time. And now, who, even though it's a larger base that appreciates it, still is very niche. I think that's what he chose. He made his vision, but he paid the ultimate price for it.
I kind of agree. He paid the ultimate price in the short run, you know, in the theatrical run. In the long run, I think it's gonna make its way. I think it's, you know, an upward, especially with the help of our podcast, it's on an upward, you know, momentum to getting to the honor it deserves, I think.
Well, it's worth noting that after Gremlins 2, he only made three major Hollywood movies.
Mm-hmm.
He made Matinee with John Goodman, which I've never seen before.
Me neither.
But it did not. It was a box office failure. He did Small Soldiers.
I love Small Soldiers,
which in and of itself is a cinemodity.
It's a great movie.
Also stars Dick Miller, by the way.
Oh.
And his last major theatrical film was Looney Tunes Back in Action,
which we
discussed will be a cinemodity.
Yeah, I also am not against that movie. I haven't seen it in a while, but I think I enjoyed it the last time I saw it.
It's worth noting that Looney Tunes Back in Action was another film. Looney Tunes Back in Action was the opposite of Gremlins. They started off the film letting him make the movie he wanted, and halfway through they said nope, and they literally pulled the rug out from underneath him.
Oh.
And the film just, like Warner Brothers had no faith in the film when they put it in the theaters, and essentially gave it no marketing dollars, and it just royally bombed in its release, because they just had no faith in it.
Warner Brothers.
Yes, Warner Brothers. And fast forward 15 years later, and they make Justice League.
Warner Brothers.
Warner Brothers just doesn't know how to make movies. Unless they're Batman. Then they can make movies.
Unless they're Batman? Did you just say Batman?
Batman.
Bitman. What about that? Okay, I have another one. I want to bring up another point that I really like about this movie. What's her name? Marla in the movie?
The redhead?
Yes. Her real name is Haviland Morris. Her first name is Haviland.
That's a great name.
It is a great name. She's a great, great actor. She might be up there with Naomi Watts. She's a Law and Order. Law and Order, not regular really, but she's been on a good bit of Law and Order. I had forgotten that she's in this movie. And god damn, her hair is red. This might be the reddest fucking hair I've ever seen in a movie. Have you seen redder hair in a movie, Zach?
Not recently.
It's so red. So here's the thing. You know, we kind of get this really, really deep subplot for the beginning and then the end of the movie where, what's her name? Phoebe Cates is, I thought she was married to Billy, but they're planning to get married or something.
They want to get married, but they can't afford it.
Okay. And, you know, when Billy gets notoriety from Clamp, Haviland Morris is like, oh, we should go out to dinner. Like, you know, we should start, you know, going out. We should do this team up type of thing. So I think he should have went with Haviland Morris. Like, Phoebe Cates just displays multiple just points of ignorance the rest of the movie. Like, she doesn't remember the Gremlin rules. She doesn't know who Gizmo is. She doesn't do anything the whole movie except crash in an elevator. Like, get out of here, Phoebe Cates. Let's take Haviland Morris any day.
It's interesting that you mention that, because, to be fair, she's not really involved with any... She doesn't really... In Gremlins, it's worth noting that in the first one, she's actually serving them drinks at the bar. Like, that's something no one remembers. Like, she's actually legit serving them drinks in the bar in the first one. And it's not until they start to get really unruly that she kind of gets scared and, runs away with Billy. And she doesn't know the rules, because she's just there at the house. It's like they have Gremlin in the box, and Mr. Wing shows up and takes him back. So, I don't blame her for not knowing the rules or not knowing Gizmo. Also, how many Mugwais are we going to be in the office?
I blame her completely.
You blame her completely, okay.
I blame her completely.
But that Gremlin, to be fair, if I had to choose between, you know, I love Gizmo, the cross-eyed Gremlin is probably my favorite Gremlin.
Oh my god, there's a shot of the googly-eyed Gremlin or the cross-eyed Gremlin, whatever we call it. I thought of as googly-eyed, but he is cross-eyed. There's a shot of just him. The whole screen is his face. And it goes on for 2 seconds too long. And in that moment, watching this movie, I finally thought that my TV might be too big. Like, I thought that it was so unsettling. Because it's just it's a full face-up puppet of the gremlin just screeching, you know, the crazy noises they make. And his eyes are googling around, and it's, like, drooling. And I'm like, okay, this should go away now. And it keeps going, and I'm, like, starting to feel uncomfortable.
I think Joe Dante, whoever the cameraman was at that time, absolutely loved that gremlin or that Mogwai. There's not as many close-ups of any other one of the creatures with him. Like the brain gremlin's there. I think he's probably the third most one after that. But the cross-eyed gremlin gets
one that tortures Gizmo
too.
The one that tortures Gizmo as well.
But he doesn't get as many, like, because I know enough about how they made this movie. Like, every time, like, there's a different, like, puppet of Gizmo, there's, like, so many different puppets of him. Like, every time there's, like, a huge close-up of his eyes and, like, mouth, mm-hmm. they made, like, a giant Gizmo, like, the size of, like, a room. Like,
yeah,
like,
I did believe that. Yeah.
And, like, in order for them to get those close-ups, they had to make one. I'm pretty sure the only other time they do that much of a close-up is the cross-eyed. I know the other one doesn't even really get that. Like, any of the others get that. Like, even, like Mohawk. Or they have all of the names. I don't know the names. I just know the cross-eyed gremlin because I like him. he is really consistent. He also shows up. He shows up at their apartment.
Mm-hmm.
He's in the cooking segment. And it's also worth noting too is that thing. But you have all these gremlins in this movie. Like, and think about it, they're gremlins. They're not supposed to be individual characters. Yet every single one of the gremlins that we're introduced to is so unique. Like even like the first like bunch, like the initial. Three that come from Gizmo?
Yeah.
Like, you have Mohawk, you have the cross-eyed one, you have, like, the grumpy-looking one, then you have the one that goes... And, like, you have that one. And it's like, and they're all unique. Like, and then when they become gremlins, their features transfer. Like, you know how easy it'd be like, okay, we want a bunch of gremlins... And yes, they do that later in the movie, like where some of them, like obviously, one drinks like the vegetable potion and starts growing vegetables out of their face.
I'm gonna throw in a gremlin myself. Vegetable gremlin, just write it up. I'm having so fun. Thank you.
Yeah. And one has like the I'm trying to think. One B has like the Warner Brothers logo painted on him.
Yep.
And like they all become like some of them become indistinguishable from each other though. But like the initial ones are so unique that you that's why you can point out half of them like the Mohawk gremlin turns into the spider gremlin halfway through.
Yeah, that's really cool. That's a neat, once again, like, attention to detail, you know, that makes the difference in this type of stuff. Love it. So are you saying that you're taking Phoebe Cates? Because that's how this all started? You're taking Phoebe Cates over Haviland Moores?
Yes, I like Phoebe Cates, but it's worth noting that both her and Marla just disappear for, like, the second act of this film.
Oh, yeah. Oh, completely.
Because she falls down the elevator shaft, which I have no idea how she survives that. and then Marla just shows up during the spider gremlin confrontation. She's like, who turned the power out in the office? I'm like, someone pulled a fire alarm. It's like, did that not send off any warning signs to you? Like, they completely disappear during the second act.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So Phoebe Cates, she was like the tour guide for the building, and they had the worst hat. Like, the hat was the building.
Excuse me. She has the greatest hat.
That's the worst hat I've ever seen.
It's also the greatest flashlight.
It's, yeah. there's points in me in the commentary where Phoebe Cates is, like, running around still wearing the hat, and I'm like, take the damn hat off! Like, why would you wear that in a time of crisis? But Haviland Moores, it actually has a plan. She's like, you got notoriety from the head of the company, like, we should team up. And she had ambition. Phoebe Cates couldn't do anything. Haviland Moores actually demonstrated that she had motivation. She also smoked indoors. Yeah, and if that's not a turn on for you, Zach, I don't even know why we're talking together on a podcast.
That's another thing that's worth noting. Like, on top of the Pan Am building, the amount of smoking that she does, like, you would not, like, imagine in a kid's movie, like, someone's like, I want a character to be smoking. Like, you could not be thrown out of the building fast enough.
Oh, yeah. It's rare.
She's chain smoking. Like, she puts one out and she automatically has another one in her mouth.
It's
crazy. She really does. Like, the amount of chain. A couple times I was trying to figure out how she even lights a cigarette because you never see her with a lighter.
That's true. You only see her like she like puts it in. She like covers it with her hand or her like cigarette case something.
I'm guessing the case has a built-in lighter.
That would be so cool. I need one of those.
You want a cigarette case that actually has a lighter built into it?
Yeah.
Okay. Or,
you know, like I need a gun that is a cigarette case and a lighter.
What? What?
You know, you see those guns? It's shaped like a gun, but it's a lighter. Like you pull the trigger and the flame comes out. But it also has to be a cigarette case. Like I can put the cigarettes in the, like it's a revolver, and I put them in the chamber.
Whatever. Okay, I'm trying to go through all the characters. I think that's the easiest way to go through this. And then you have Mr. and Mrs. Futterman, Dick Miller. That's all that matters. And it's worth noting that Dick Miller is in most of Joe Dante's movies. Okay. And I think Joe Dante just loves having Dick Miller. So he's like, because there's no reason for those two characters to be in this movie other than I want this actor in this movie. I'm going to put them in here come hell or high water.
Yeah, because his wife, like, literally disappears. Like, he literally leaves her behind at a point in the movie.
Well, he leaves her outside because he sees Clamp come out of the plant in the ground. Yep. And he sneaks in there because he tries to get in the building because he has his moment of like realization that he's not insane once he sees the bat gremlin trying to attack him out. He covers it in cement.
Mm-hmm.
But no, like I said, like, those are two characters you don't need, but it's fun to have Dick Miller back because he is such a he's presence great. In of himself.
He is great. Oh yeah, Dick Miller. You are kind of convincing me on the Dick Miller, maybe a Dick Miller series,
Dick Miller is a worthy follow-up to Dean Norris.
I don't know. We talked about J.K. Simmons. We talked about J.K. Simmons also.
J.K. Simmons won an Oscar. He's a little too above us at this point.
We got respect. We have respect for J.K. Simmons, so we can do him on a podcast.
It's like Total Recall. He's too good for us.
Oh God, let's not go down this rabbit hole.
But no, Dick Miller is another Dean, probably even a lesser Dean Norris, where everybody knows his face, but nobody knows his name.
That's a good point. He is one of those, like, I know that guy type of actors.
He's a character actor.
Yeah, okay.
Then there's really the only other main character that's worth talking about, I think, at this point would be...
Talking about the guy who falls in love or decides to fall in love with the female gremlin at the end?
No.
Because he's a pretty big character. Forster, I think his name is in the movie.
Yeah,
like, guy.
He's not the one who disappears halfway through the movie. That's worth noting. A lot of the characters in this movie just disappear.
So that is the actor Forster. That's Robert Picardo. So according to the internet, which I did not know, he's the voice of Johnny Cab in Total Recall. You didn't think I was going to get a voice acting thing in here, did you, Zach?
I knew you were because you mentioned that during a Total Recall episode. But who I was talking about was Grandpa Fred. Who's the, I guess, oh God. I know now there's Sven Gulli who does this. But I guess he was like an original like Elvira almost.
Yeah, he had that. I would say he was kind of he was doing a version of the late night movies type of thing, you know, that horror movies that, you know, what do they move him at the beginning? He says he gets a 3 a.m. time slot or something. We have another great line of dialogue I did want to mention. We have two in quick succession, and it's a random scene when the gremlins like first start to jump out into like the common area of the building. And it's when women are getting frozen yogurt. I think it's frozen yogurt.
Yeah.
It's like a salad bar or some type of like food, you know, you're in a line like that. And before the gremlins pop out, the woman is talking to the worker and she's saying like, are those roasted? Are those like nuts roasted? And the guy's like, I don't know. Let me ask. And the woman goes, because when they're roasted, I've heard they have like 70% less death.
I'm not sure. Alex? Are the peanut butter cups all natural?
I think so. I know they're pesticide-free.
That's not the same thing. They could put 100 other things in there.
I think a lot of the stuff comes off the peanuts when they roast.
Yeah, well, you know what? Roasting is about the worst thing you can do. In countries where they don't roast, they have, I don't know, 70% less death.
Like, that's what she says. She says 70% less death. Yeah. This clip is going in the episode, Zach. This is one of the funniest lines, I think. She's like, I heard they had 70% less death. And then, very shortly after that, a gremlin, like, pops out of one of the food containers, and a woman screams, like, rats! And some other person goes, did she say there were rats? And the worker responds with probably the best way to quash any fear in the food industry. He responds with, she said there's no rats.
It's a rat! Oh my God.
What's going on here? Did she say there are rats?
No, she said there's no rats.
That's not what she said.
Like, that's what this guy's first response is. Someone, imagine living that scenario. How baffling that would be if you hear someone scream, "Oh, a rat! Are there rats?" No, she's screaming about how there's no rats. Oh, this is, like I said before, those tiny little bits, they go by so fast. You gotta be catching them. It's great.
Gotta be vigilant. Again, going back to the gremlins, which gremlin do you think, like, the brain gremlin? I've always been fascinated by him. The fact that they had Tony Randall voice of him. And the only thing I have to say is that I was expecting to have a little bit more, like, rewatching this now, like, seriously, I'm surprised there's not more of a payoff with him at the end, considering the fact they build him up. Because he shows up halfway through the film, and he shows up, what, every 10 minutes? And he's doing something different.
Yeah, he's always doing something different with his intelligence. That's a really good way to put it. I don't think I've ever thought of that aspect before. But he really becomes a focus of the movie once he's created.
Because he shows up in the lab, and Christopher Lee and the two twin scientists are listening to him. And that's another one of my favorite scenes, the fact that they both have, like, their black gloves on, and they lean in and put their hands on their chin. The two gremlins in the back do the exact same thing. Yeah. And he's talking about what their role in all this is, and he pumps the non-nocturnal serum into the...
He called it genetic sunblock, which I love calling something that.
Genetic sunblock.
Oh, genetic sunblock.
As he does that, then there's that moment. And then he shows up again when he's being interviewed, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or does he show up again before that?
I think he shows up again when he's being interviewed. Then there's the end when he sings New York, New York.
Of course.
But I think there's one more. I do think there is one more before that.
There's one more where he's doing... I feel he's doing something. We never really see him roaming around. He's usually either sitting still or doing something. Like, we don't see him, like, doing anything to Gizmo. He's more... Because, again, I don't know. Like, there's also parts of this... Like, and talk about Gizmo. Gizmo is the... quote-unquote star of the film. Mm-hmm. He's probably in the film the least out of any of the main characters.
Oh yeah, he only really has his moment to shine at the end when he turns into Rambo.
Exactly, which is another insane moment in a kid's movie, that the cute little stuffed animal character turns into Rambo.
We even get to, like, have training scenes of him turning into Rambo where he has tiny weights. Where did Gizmo find tiny weights to train with? That's awesome.
Well, I think, like, never mind, he gets the red little, what, the bandana or whatever, yep. And he ties it around his forehead. The ultimate payoff of that is that Billy is holding him, and Phoebe Cates shows up, and it's like, what happened to him? I guess I just pushed him too far.
Yep, oh, it's great.
It's such a subtly brilliant line.
I don't know, I guess they pushed him too far.
Oh, I know it's a play beautiful. On the Rambo thing, but it's like, oh my, I think about that. Like, even going back to the Key and Peele sketch, mm-hmm. And it's like you could do another bit where you have another person around the boardroom, and it's like, we're going to have our cute, lovable character turn into Rambo 3/4 of the way throughout the film.
Oh, yeah. That's one of the things that I really am always surprised by the Key and Peele sketch, that they didn't go with more stuff from the movie, because I don't know if Zach has seen a lot of Key and Peele, the show, but I think that's one of their hallmarks in their comedy, is that they set up a sketch and it's rather normal, and then they just continually fall down the hole of absurdity till you can't believe what they're doing anymore. And I really expected them to, you know, do that with the Gremlins too, because they mention a lot of the Gremlins, but they don't mention the Flasher Gremlin. There's a Gremlin with a mini trench coat that flashes Phoebe Cates. They very well could have talked about that, and so much more. What else did we not talk about? We haven't mentioned the electricity gremlin. That exists.
That exists?
The vegetable gremlin, I think you mentioned. The spider gremlin.
The Greta the gremlin?
Yes, the female gremlin. Yep. We got the brainy gremlin. We talked about him. The bat gremlin, or the gargoyle gremlin that Dick Miller fights.
There's the Wicked Witch of the East gremlin. I'm melting! I'm melting!
When I watched that in my commentary, she started saying I'm melting, and I was like, what a world, what a world! And then they said it, and I like clapped. I was so happy.
Oh, Jesus. Holy shit. Oh my God, this is gruesome. I'm melting! What a world!
Well, going back to that final scene, though, is I think that's one clever thing about the movie. You have the whole plot. Clamp goes outside. He's fully on board with the plan. they're like, "What are you doing?" He's lowering the what would you call it? Like,
it's like a some type of screen to block screen. Out the sunlight.
And then they're like, "Oh, we're all ready to go, Mr. Clamp." And then right on cue, which is, again, this is not just brilliant for a Gremlins movie, like for Rob and I liking this movie for insane reasons. This is just brilliant storytelling. You have this whole plan that's being set up, and the moment it's about to unfold, it starts to rain.
Yeah.
And it's worth knowing that like 15 minutes later, there's no rain outside. Like, they go outside the building afterwards. There's no rain. It's sunny out. Like, they completely abandon that plot thread. Like, don't get me wrong. It's an obstacle. But It's clever because it's the last thing you're expecting at this point.
Oh, yeah. It threw me for a loop on the rewatch. I was like, oh, yeah, I forgot about that. That's cool. That's a really good, like, little twist at the end.
Yeah. It's like okay, how are they going to get out of this?
Yep. But
it's worth noting, though. It's like, even at the end, maybe it's because I'm sympathetic toward the villains sometimes. But it's when they're killing all the gremlins, I can't help but feel bad. Because as I was watching this, I'm trying to figure out what's the worst thing that the gremlins do. It's like the gremlins, I don't think, kill anybody. They hurt people.
The only person I think they might kill, the electricity gremlin, like.
Christopher Lee,
yeah. Goes through Christopher Lee's body, and we see him like drop to the floor and fall down, and so that's the only one where maybe he's dead. But I was thinking the same thing. They just cause mayhem, really.
The gremlins.
Yeah.
They're like, they scratch people, they do things like, because I'm trying to figure out, like, what do they do? I know they bite Christopher Lee, they scratch obviously the woman in the, like, at the control room or whatever it is.
The gargoyle scratches Dick Miller.
Yeah. But it's worth you, going back to this scene, it's worth you knowing that in the beginning of the film, before there's any gremlins, they're like, another thing this movie's really, oh God, forward thinking about, they're watching all their employees. Like, isn't there like one guy taking like a smoke break, like behind like a filing cabinet, and they're like, "Hey, you, you're fired."
Unauthorized break time, you are fired.
That's an unauthorized break period, my friend. You don't work here anymore.
Terminated. Then he like gets on the voiceover. He's like, "Yes, you. Bye. Clean out your desk."
And it's worth noting that like that's something that goes on today. Like Big Brother's always watching. And like, even though some of the stuff in this movie, like the 24-hour cable, like does not resonate as much as it once did.
Mm-hmm.
There's still a lot of these. There's a lot of points in this movie that are there. I'm shocked that this movie is not picked up on. Like I know it. I know I've said it before. But, like, I don't know why this thing is not, like, celebrated. Like, every year there's like, a screening somewhere where people, like, dress up as gremlins and people, like, sort of, like, do all, like, not Rocky Horror Picture Show level, but, okay. like the Room level, like, where people just, like, worship this thing. Like, you can, like, I would love to see the Disaster Artist based around this movie, where you have, like, Steven, and I guess you can't do it because you could not portray Steven Spielberg. I there's no way, no film studio is ever going to allow someone to portray him.
Oh, yeah.
Because that would just be so, you just don't do that. I keep saying that, like, 30 years from now, like, when all these people are, like, when Lucas, Scorsese, Spielberg, like, all these directors of, like, the 70s and 80s are dead, you're going to learn so much horrible things that they did, like, during, like, so many, the dam's just going to break.
That's a Zach prediction right there. Watch out.
It's true. Well, no, I have a prediction about Spielberg that I want to get into. Once you're done with your Gremlins points, there's one final point I want to bring up. I want your opinion on it, but carry on.
Okay. Because I have something similar to that about subtitles that I wanted to talk about.
Oh, God, subtitles.
So the one other thing I want to talk about Gremlins, even though I could go on forever about all the funny lines that I pulled out while watching it again this time. The one thing that I want to talk about, Zach, is another voice acting thing. But it's actually a question. It's actually somewhat of a mystery, according to my research. So I'm assuming you have seen The Fifth Element?
No.
You've never seen The Fifth Element?
I've never seen Luc Besson's The Fifth Element.
Oh, okay. It's a good movie?
Did I cut this tangent off?
No, you didn't. I'm still going to explain everything. So Bruce Willis is the main character, and at the beginning of the movie, Bruce Willis, when he, like, wakes up in his apartment, we get a few scenes where his mother calls him, and his mother nags him. And this role, the mother is only over the phone, so it's just voice acting. This role is uncredited. And the internet seems to be divided on who they think voices this. There's someone who's they think it is, who is not related to Gremlins. But the other half seems to think it's Haviland Morris, who is Marla in this movie.
And they moved the deadline back. You see, Billy,
this is your problem right here. You only see your little part of it. I have to have a complete situation, a long-term overview outlook perspective. It's as simple as that.
Corbin, sweetheart, you got broken fingers, you can't punch my number?
Hi, Mom.
17 messages. And don't tell me your machine is broken again. Those things are good for 1,000 years.
So, Zach, my question for you is, how do we find this out? Who do we got to tweet to find this out? Who do we tweet, Zach?
I don't know.
Who are we tweeting, Zach? Who don't know? Sorry. Who do we write a letter and then a follow-up tweet?
Who do we promise to donate $25 to to give us the answer we're looking for?
So, can we tweet Haviland Morris? Have you ever tried that? Have you ever tried tweeting her?
I don't think has she done anything recently?
Law and Order's VU, maybe like season 12, which was season 19 now. So
I think that's like 15 years ago now. So
you don't think she does the tweets?
You have to go looking for her. You have to go to her and hope that it's not just like an agent that if she has a Twitter feed that checks it. You have to hope that's actually her, or somebody, or she even if it is her, she's willing to entertain such questions.
What if we tweet the director? You think the director would tell us? The Luc Besson?
I think he's too busy trying to make ends meet after Valerian Bomb.
So you're saying he needs the donation, and he might take
$25. You offer him $25 for an answer, he probably will give it to you.
Okay, so audience, we'll get back to you on that. I'm going to do a deep analysis of who I need to tweet to figure this out. We'll get back to you. But right now, just believe it is Haviland Morris, because that's what I like to think of it as. That was really, I think, the last thing I had specific to Gremlins 2. Before we get into this other stuff, do we want to talk about this status as a cinemodity? Or are you steadfastly saying that you're not sure? It hasn't reached that status yet from that before.
You mean Gremlins 2?
Yeah, because I think it's a cinemodity for sure.
Oh yes. Oh,
okay. So you're in agreement.
It checks off all the boxes. Like it's okay. Not like Men, Women, and Children's a masterpiece to make. But no, this thing checks off all the boxes. It's insane. It's entertaining. It has a niche following.
Yeah, and you, I think there's something in it for everybody, and it's a true weird experience. No matter who you show this to.
I don't think there is something. Cause I think I don't know who you would show outside of the whole idea of showing this to somebody. I think if you show this to the wrong people, they just think it's goofy. They're like, that was stupid. It's like, I don't know. I'm always hesitant to show people. Like, that's one thing about, like, you know, I love movies. I'm always extremely leery of recommending movies to people because there's so many times where I'm like, oh, you should watch this. And it's like, I don't think this, like, it always terrifies me. It's like, it's one thing recommending a movie to someone, because if you recommend a movie to someone, they go into it expecting it, and they come out and they're like, this was horrible. They'll go out and tell 15 people that they hate a movie before they tell one person that they love the movie. And that terrifies me. So, you know what?
Yeah.
You better
Be
left alone. I'd rather have them stumble on cable or on whatever people watch movies on these days. Let them stumble onto it. Because it terrifies. I'd rather have a movie go mum's the word rather than negative.
Sure. Okay. Fair
but no,
point.
This movie checks off all the boxes.
Cinemodity. I think there is one thing that I forgot to talk about. Okay, we actually do have to talk about Dean Norris in this movie.
Yes.
Because I, speaking in all serious now, he does not have the largest part in this movie. You might not know it's him, I think, if you're not really looking for him.
I was trying to figure, okay, to be fair, I'm watching this on like a 20-year-old VHS tape.
That's fair. Zach does have a lower quality version than I do.
No, so I like the only person I think maybe he might be, because this was after, or no, was this, no, this would have been the same year as Total Recall.
Oh, okay.
I got to see exactly when, because he's not even listed in the credits for this. So, like, he's, the only thing I can think of is he the SWAT guy who shoots the shotgun into the floor? It's like, what happened?
It moved,
sir. What's happening?
It moved, sir.
All right. Carry on.
That is Dean Norris. Yep.
Is it him?
That's him. Yep, that's him in this movie.
Do you know that for a fact, or you just assume it?
I honestly, I mean, after we do this, I'm going to give you this version of the movie. I think you can tell it's him. Like, I froze the screen. I looked. I think it's clear that it's him. It's Dean Norris.
But if he's the SWAT team leader, then why is he answering to someone?
He's answering to Clamp because Clamp runs in. Clamp is the one who's is talking to Billy, and he's like, "What was that?" And he was like, "Oh, it moved, sir." He's talking to Clamp. I'm pretty sure it's harder to see him, but when Clamp runs into the building and slips on the gremlin goo, like the SWAT person right behind him is Dean Norris as well. I'm fairly certain.
Oh, okay, I'll take.
So
that.
Yeah, and I once you see the higher quality version, Zach, I think it's clear that it's Dean Norris. He is wearing a hat, but you can see as much of his face as in Total Recall.
Don't knock my grainy VHS version 4x3.
No, I'm not. But that's Dean Norris in this movie. We get one line from him.
One line. And a glorious line it is.
That was enough to get this movie on the Dean Norris series, everybody.
That's all it takes. All Dean Norris has to do is kind of just run by the screen real quick. Up in the Dean Norris canon.
And so I think Zach stole my thunder by beginning this episode with a giant, you know, story about Dean Norris and his universe. So are you saying that after this he goes on to California to do the Terminator? That's your connection?
Well, to be fair, we're not watching Terminator, so I'm not sure how that fits into the story of Dean Norris.
Okay, so but we do know, or I'm positing now, that his SWAT team and government work is all kind of right around each other. You know, his DEA stuff, his SWAT team leader stuff. I think that's all fairly close together. I'm not counting police commissioner in that. That's a different story.
Oh, okay.
I like it though. I like Zach finally gave me some feedback on the Dean Norris universe. I think I'll hold off on the conspiracy theories now because Zach has satiated me. But just wait until we get to Abigail the Second. Hinge is gonna blow off. Okay, so Gremlins 2 is a cinemodity. And apparently Gremlins 2 is such a good cinemodity, it has given Zach and I both something we wanted to talk about other than Gremlins 2.
This is my concern. Like, everybody, as Rob probably knows, there's this thing on the internet where it's like, how long until they remake Back to the Future? How long until they remake Gremlins? Because there's no way they can just straight up do Gremlins 3. Like, there's... people only care about the first Gremlins for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And there's really nothing outside of Gizmo. There's nothing sacred about the Gremlins franchise.
It really isn't. People know about it, but it's not like, you know, you don't see the Gizmo action figures or stickers as much as you see some other stuff. Sure.
Yeah. Well, there are Gizmo action figures. Like there are.
Oh, yeah. No, they exist. But you see them nowhere near as frequent as the other stuff.
No, he's not like, you don't, like, it's not like every Halloween. Like, every Halloween, you'll go through, like, Party City and see the Beetlejuice costume. That movie is 30 years old, yet every year you will see that costume being sold.
Definitely.
Yet you will not see a Gizmo, whatever it is. How long until we get Gremlins 3? And when we do get it, it's inevitability. It's going to happen one day. It's like the Back to the Future remake. We are going to get that. At some point, we are going to get, considering the fact that Christopher Lloyd and Michael J. Fox are still alive, yet they will not make a Back to the Future 4.
Mm-hmm.
Remake is the only thing now. Because obviously, like I said, nobody cares about Zach Galligan and Phoebe Cates. When that happens, will they just straight up go the CGI route and just do a straight retelling of Gremlins where it's Christmas night and there's something like that? Like, is that what happens? Or do they try to keep any of the comedy in there?
I don't know. That's a good question. So I'm tempted to say right off the bat that they would lean more towards like a full-on remake, because I feel that, you know, people do care about the Gremlins movie, the first one, but I don't think it's something that, you know, is as, say, visually memorable as some of these other movies, like, say, Back to the Future. Like, I think there's scenes in Back to the Future that, you know, people can really, really latch onto. Quotes as well. Like, you know, you say, when this baby hits 88 miles per hour, you're going to see some serious shit. Like, everybody knows that's from Back to the Future. Do we have any quotes like that from the original Gremlins? And I feel like that is weighing on my decision of whether I would remake it or soft reboot it based on how well people remember the original source material.
My thing is, and this is what, because I'm trying to, because they're probably going to go soft reboot. Like, they're not going to go straight up reboot, because what it would be, if I had to guess, like, I'm putting my hack screenwriter cap on right now, and what I think it would be is that you have it would be Zach Galligan, Phoebe Cates. You get them back.
Okay.
And they'd be the parents, and it'd be their it would be their kids. And let's like I don't know who their kids would be. Like you'd have to sit there. The whole idea of or probably divorced. Like they'd have to be divorced to make it sound like what people go like these days.
Yeah.
Zach Galligan might, who knows what he'd be into, but something would happen where I don't know how you reintroduce Gizmo into it. You could always just say, I don't know, Gizmo's just been around forever and something happens to him. And then I guess it's like, okay, how do you say Gizmo's been around for 30 years or 25 years and this never happened again?
I don't know. Because like he gets wet or something and it's like, oh, it took 30 years?
Or like something happens or maybe they find like a female female Mogwai, like something like that happens. Like someone, I don't know. Like I'm trying to really put my horrible ideas thing. They find like a female Mogwai.
Well, the female one from the second movie lives. Like it doesn't get destroyed from the electric gremlin at the end of the second movie.
I would imagine. Well, I don't know. But I don't think they connected. I would imagine they're going to distance themselves as far away as possible from that movie.
That's a good point.
I would not be surprised if they go, or maybe they don't even have Gizmo, because remember at the first movie he gets taken away from them.
Mm-hmm.
There's a good chance that that's maybe it's because in the first Gremlins, Mr. Wing has what, the grandson or a nephew? I don't know if you're, maybe it's just a neighborhood kid. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's how Gizmo gets back to them. They might even just ignore the second one entirely.
I would be very upset with that decision, but I could totally see them doing it.
But that's what they do, though. It would be the straight up just soft reboot route where it's the first one, Phoebe Cates and Zach Galligan are together. And Gizmo, it's like, oh man, except it's their kids this time who do it. And that'd be the excuse. It's like, they didn't learn the lesson once. Now it's time to, again. It's like, and that's what it would be, though.
You think they small town setting again?
I don't know if it'd be that same. Like, you look at that first Gremlins, it's like Norman Rockwell painting. Like,
oh, yeah.
Town. It's like straight up. It's actually the same town from Back to the Future, actually.
Oh, cool.
It's Universal Backlot. I don't know, because the problem too is that it's such a small story, the first Gremlins,
mm-hmm.
and then doing it for the modern era, like how do you not get like obviously somebody has to film this on their cell phone at some point. Like at some point in the movie, one of the kids, somebody has to be like, I think there's a gremlin in my car, and then like obviously like it's like, I don't know, like there's like a soccer mom who's
Gremlin is gonna get a Twitter account, Zach, in the movie.
Like that's what I mean though. And like the gremlin's gonna sign up. Like at one point, like the gremlins are like running around town, they see someone left their laptop open, and the gremlin goes, Twitter and starts typing things into it. And it's like there'd be something like, and like there'd be like some soccer mom like going Christmas shopping and she tells like the GPS. It's like it's like turn left up ahead. Then like the woman keeps driving. And it's like, wait, that was my turn. And it's like, GPS, get me home. And like a gremlin like jumps out of the console and starts like biting her neck. Like there'd be something like that. It's like you have to shove technology into this. Or like Alexa, the Amazon Alexa thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like there'd be something like that where like the smart home. It's like Alexa, like someone shoves like the gremlin like into the oven. What temperature would you like? Royal. And like it'd be something that the whole audience would laugh and cheer because I know what that is. I have an Alexa. And it's like, and I feel like, again, it'd be just lowest common denominator humor. Zach, it's like, I feel like that's what it has to be.
We can do it. Thing, let's write this.
Oh, no. I don't want to write this movie. Because it makes
so much money.
I don't want to make money. Because going back to my comment about Spielberg, it's like, you know why they haven't made, like, why Hollywood hasn't remade Back to the Future yet? It's because Steven Spielberg has said, over my dead body. And that's the thing. I think he's keeping he has the rights to so many of these movies. Mm-hmm. He's the only one holding back the floodgates. And that's what I was trying to say. Like, when he dies, like, so many things, like, Back to the Future, Jaws, I'm trying to think all these things, like, they're going to be greenlit for remake. I was thinking about it. You realize there hasn't been a Jaws sequel since, like, 1987?
Oh, man. No, I have not realized that.
It's like, think about that. They made three of those sequels, and then they stopped. It's like, you know how fast these movies would be greenlit? Like, some studio executive is just dying to greenlight the Back to the Future remake. Because it's going to make $1 billion opening weekend. and everyone's going to go see it. It's going to be Jurassic World. It's going to be the exact same movie, except stupider. Except instead of Michael J. Fox, you're going to have Guy McFace. And instead of Christopher Lloyd, you're going to have... Who's an older actor? Like, who's an older actor everybody knows and likes? It'll be Steve Carell.
One of them would be female. One of them would be female, at least. At least one of them would be female.
You're right. Marty McFly would have to be a woman. I'm trying to think. Who's an actor that everybody loves but really has no talent?
I don't know.
I'm trying to think. Who's an actor everybody loves that has, like, no talent with, and, like, is known for being a has-been, yet everybody still loves them?
I don't know. That's a tough one, Zach.
I'm trying to think of, like, okay, think of actors from, like, The Office or Parks and Rec. Like that. Like, okay, take, like, okay, this is what it would be. Aubrey Plaza is Marty McFly and, I'm trying to think. Oh, my God, that actually makes too much sense. Like, in a horrible, like, crappy screenwriting way, that makes way too much sense. I've spoken too much. I can't say anymore.
Like,
I'm
just
terrified.
Aubrey Plaza? It does. I was
Aubrey
actually
Plaza
say thing.
As a young Marty
think.
McFly, make, like, if you're, again, if you're the Universal executive, that makes perfect sense.
I think that would fit really well, yeah.
Oh, God. And she has to write this. No. Okay, who would be Doc in that? Who would be Doc Brown? Who's an older actor that they like?
That's what I'm trying to think of some, like, because you have to play that, like, kooky, crazy aspect just as well, you know? Like, I don't think that they would change that aspect of the character.
I know who it would be. Aubrey Plaza is Marty McFly, and Jeff Bridges is Doc Brown.
Jeff Bridges! I could get behind that.
That's it right now. That is your new Back to the Future.
Jay, I love it so much that it's not only in the movie, but it's definitely in the movie. There's no backseats on that one, no penny taxis. Yes, in the movie, done!
When are we getting it? What year?
No year, because I'm gonna take a gun and I'm gonna blow my brains out so nobody. I'm gonna destroy this recording. Then I'm going to blow my brains out so nobody ever hears this.
I thought you were gonna say you were gonna, like, end the world, not just end your life.
I'm gonna buy the rights. Like, did you hear the thing? Like, whatever it was, like, Elon Musk is like, I want to buy Facebook just so I can shut it down.
Yeah, I did.
It's like that's what I'm going to do. I want to buy the rights for. That's what Steven Spielberg's doing. He's buying the rights for these things just so he can shut them down.
Okay, how much do you think it costs to get buy the rights?
I don't know. We might be more than $25 donation.
$50. Okay, Zach has left. We're on to the Solo Rob podcast. Total Recall is a late night movie. Fantastic Planet is a late night movie. Star Wars The Clone Wars is a late night movie. I haven't gone back on that. Gremlins 2 is a late night movie. That episode of Breaking Bad we discussed is a late night movie. All my choices, really. Oh, I think he's coming back. I gotta stop talking.
So what snack do we eat during this film?
Yes, what snack do we eat? Oh my, so there are so many snacks to eat during this movie. You know, it really kind of is a player's choice. You could go with vegetables for the vegetable gremlin. You know, you could go for some type of popcorn atmosphere. At least that's the feeling that I got, because in my version of the movie, when they break the fourth wall and reveal that this is like a film reel and in a theater, that gives me the popcorn vibe, that type of thing. If there's any way, Zach, you as the snack master, please tell me, can we get the liquid electricity that the gremlin drinks? Because that would be the snack.
I'm looking up online. I typed in gremlins food into cereal. I got gremlin. There's gremlin cereal.
Do you have any of this? Did you buy it on clearance, like the Batman vs. Superman cereal?
No, I unfortunately did not get that. It was a little before my time.
Yeah.
But no, someone actually made some really clever, like, desserts, gremlins, where it's like them melting.
Oh, that's cool. Is it like a cake, or is it like, what's it actually made of?
It's some sort of dessert. I can't tell what it is just by looking at it. But it's like a mess of stuff, like, in the shape of, like, a gremlin melting.
Okay, so that's probably a lot of frosting. I would guess there's, like, a cake base or something to keep it all together.
Yeah. There's also someone made a Greta cake in the shape of Greta, the female.
But it's not, like, hard candy or, like, sculpted candy or anything, right?
It's probably more in the ballpark of a sculpted candy now.
Oh, okay.
There's gremlins cupcakes.
How much do these cost? Like, are we recommending something to buy? oh, these yeah, just, like, you have to learn how to make it.
Okay. Yeah, you'd have to sit there. You have to be kind of have some sort of, like, artistic. Yeah, there's a lot of gizmo cakes. Like, a shocking amount of people who make gizmo cakes.
Would you eat a gizmo cake?
If it tasted good, yes.
Did you eat it in front of your gizmo animals, stuffed animals?
Maybe. Only if I didn't have to share with them.
Would you feed the gizmo cake to the gizmo stuffed animal after midnight?
Definitely not.
Oh, I thought you were going to say definitely.
No, I like my gizmo. I don't want him to suffer or turn him into a gremlin.
So that's what you're saying. You're saying do some fancy gremlin baked good? Is that what you're saying?
That's your snack? That's what I think I'm saying.
That's your snack. I don't know. I'm a little disappointed in the snack master.
And then when you're doing that, you're humming the gremlin song. You're humming. Na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na-na.
See, was that good?
That's pretty good.
Yeah, see, I can whistle. See, if you listen to my music, you'd know that.
I don't know.
I'm sorry. If you listen to N Inferiority Complex, you would know that.
I was to say, I've heard those Inferiority Complex guys. They ain't too good.
Okay, so if you have the skills to do some awesome baked goods, a melting gremlin would be pretty cool. I think that, you know, if you maybe get a vegetable tray from your supermarket and you rearrange it to look like a gremlin, that'd be cool too.
I agree.
Or the liquid electricity. If you have that and you can drink it while you're watching this movie, I would say do it at the start and see if you can, like, go into the movie through the TV since you're electricity.
All right. This is not a drill, folks. I just found out they made a stuffed animal of the cross-eyed gremlin.
Is that going in your cart?
That is definitely. I didn't know about this until now, so I'm on the hunt.
Good. Zach.
And it's worth noting that it's the exact same as the gizmo toy, except the eyes are crossed. Like, literally, it's the exact same toy, except the eyes are different.
Like, the fur design is the same?
It's eerily. The only difference, the fur on the head's a little bit different, but the body's more or less the same.
I'm against that toy because whoever designed it is clearly trying to give Phoebe Cates credibility and say, oh, it was a simple mistake. They're not. They're different goddamn gremlins. I disagree with that toy, Zach. Okay, don't buy it. Don't buy that toy.
That's cross-eyed, so
I forbid you from buying that toy.
All right, Rob, I'll make you a deal. I know we still haven't decided on how we're going to end the show yet. We haven't really put that much thought into it. But if I may make a suggestion, this one time, this one instance...
Just today.
Could we end the podcast with the Gremlins theme?
Do you know what I'm going to say? I want the Gremlins theme backwards. That's what I want.
They sold a toy of the Flasher Gremlin. He has a little trench coat.
No. You got to send me this link. I might add this one to my cart.
We all need this.
Everybody. This should be a staple. This should be part of a balanced breakfast.